Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Have you ever been in that situation where you're absolutely certain you're solving a problem? You know, you implement this totally logical, rational decision.
And then you just watch it backfire.
Spectacularly. Like 3 months later, the whole thing is somehow dramatically worse. It's like the system itself just decided to, I don't know, push back.
That paradox, that is the perfect starting point for this deep dive. That gap between a sensible local action and a disastrous global consequence, it shows we're just failing to account for connectivity.
So we're moving past just looking at the individual parts in isolation.
We're diving into systems thinking, and really, it's a toolkit. It's designed to help you tame that real-world complexity and deliver decisions that are genuinely, well, better, more robust, and wiser.
That sounds like an enormous promise. I mean, most conventional wisdom says when things get complex, you break them down, right?
Yeah.
Into smaller, simpler, manageable pieces.
And our sources here warn that that approach is, and I quote, doomed to failure.
A stark warning. What?
Because when you break a system down, you destroy the most important thing, the relationships between the parts. The core principle of systems thinking is that you must study complex systems intact.
In the round, as a whole.
As a whole, you have to preserve that connectedness. If you try to influence the system by just tweaking one visible component, you almost guarantee unforeseen consequences somewhere else. It's like squeezing a balloon, you know?
Okay, so if we can't break it down, how on earth do we even begin to capture all that complexity without just being, you know, paralyzed by information overload?
And that brings us to the primary tool, the causal loop diagram. Or CLD for short.
CLD, okay.
It's a visual method for mapping complexity that, honestly, it looks deceptively simple. You draw circles for variables like staff morale or incidence of error, and then you just draw arrows between them to show cause and effect.
So it's the process of drawing it that's the key.
The process is everything. Drawing those, debating the causality with your team, it forces a kind of rigor that surfaces assumptions people didn't even know they had.
So the value isn't just the final diagram. It's building that genuinely and deeply shared view among colleagues who might be operating on completely different assumptions.
Absolutely. And when the diagram is finished, the insight it delivers often feels obvious, but only with hindsight. It just reveals why the system behaved the way it did.
Okay, let's start at the beginning then. If we're looking at systems, what are the characteristics that make a system so different from just a pile of parts?
Well, systems display properties that belong to the whole, not the individual components. The first one is called emergence.
Emergence.
Think about a really high-performing sports team or maybe a great jazz ensemble. You can study every individual player, know everything about them, but you still can't predict the performance of the team as a unit.
That chemistry.
That teamwork is an emergent property. It only exists at the system level.
Which immediately clarifies why breaking things down fails. You lose the emergence. Okay, the second core property the research mentions is self-organization.
Right. And this is all about dynamics managing dynamics. The classic analogy is a bicycle and its rider.
Cool.
A stationary bicycle just tips over instantly. But when the system becomes dynamic, when the rider is continuously pumping energy into it by pedaling, it maintains a stable, upright structure. It's self-stabilizing.
And if we map that idea onto, say, a business.
That continuous flow of energy it's analogous to the very heart of leadership. If that energy stops, if leadership stops setting direction or making decisions, the system immediately starts to degrade. The organization just starts tipping over.
That is a very powerful metaphor for management. So how do these properties, emergence and self-organization, how do they actually arise within that flow of energy?
They arise through one thing, feedback.
Feedback.
Which is just the flow of information that connects one variable back to itself through a loop of cause and effect.
Now, when most people hear feedback, they think of stability, you know, like a thermostat in your house or your body regulating its temperature.
Homeostasis, yeah.
But is feedback always a stabilizing force?
Not at all. That's just one kind. Feedback can operate to control and constrain behavior, yes, but it can also operate to exaggerate or amplify it. Think of microphone feedback. A small noise becomes a deafening screech.
Or a stock market bubble.
Or a frenzied stock market bubble. And that distinction is the bedrock of all this because all real-world systems are just networks built from two fundamental types of feedback loops.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics. We have reinforcing loops and balancing loops.
Yeah.
How do we tell them apart on those diagrams?
It's surprisingly simple. Every link on a CLD is marked either S for same causality, if A goes up, B goes up, or O for opposite, if A goes up, B goes down.
Okay.
Reinforcing loops, or R loops, have an even number of those O links. That includes zero. So if you trace the loop, the original effect is just amplified on every single turn.
So they're the engines of change. They're either a virtuous circle driving success or a vicious circle driving failure.
Exactly. They generate boom and bust. Think about the generic engine of business growth. A bigger satisfied customer base leads to more sales revenue.
Which creates more profits.
Which gives you more funds for investment, which you use to attract an even bigger satisfied customer base. It's a closed loop. And every element reinforces the growth of the whole system.
The scary thing about these R loops, though, is exponential growth. It starts so, so slowly, you just dismiss it, and then suddenly it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
What does the famous frog quiz anecdote tell us about that?
It's the perfect illustration of why we humans are just terrible at anticipating exponential change. So imagine a pond where a lily pad doubles in size every 24 hours. It'll cover the whole pond in 50 days.
And suffocate the frogs.
Right. And the frogs know they need 10 days to implement a solution.
So they have to start by day 40. But what does the pond actually look like on day 40?
It's practically empty. On day 40, just 10 days before doom, that lily pad covers less than 0.1% of the pond.
So the frogs see a negligible problem and feel zero urgency.
Exactly. The takeaway for you is that you have to notice a very small problem far away and take serious disproportionate action then. If you wait until the danger is obvious, when the pond is, say, 25 or 50% covered.
It's already too late.
It's already far too late.
That's a staggering disconnect. Okay, so R loops drive change. What about the other type, the balancing loops or B loops?
B loops are the systems of stability. They always have an odd number of O links. They are inherently goal seeking. They work to bring a system back towards some set point.
Like a thermostat or a budget target or just filling a coffee cup.
Exactly. They're always trying to converge on a target. But, and this is a huge but, they often suffer from one massive problem. Time delays.
Right, time delays.
They're the single biggest challenge. If there's a significant lag between sensing the state, taking action, and seeing the effect of that action, the system will start to oscillate. It overshoots, then it undershoots. It's chaotic.
Is there an example of this oscillation that, you know, almost everyone has experienced?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's the universal experience of trying to adjust the temperature in an unfamiliar hotel shower.
Ah, yes. I know this one well.
You turn the handle, it's too cold, you wait, nothing happens, so you turn it way more. Suddenly you're scalded, so you yank it back too far, and now it's freezing again.
And the cycle just begins all over again.
That time delay in the pipes causes you to constantly overcorrect.
So the insight there is, if you see a system oscillating, the answer isn't to turn the knob harder, but maybe to reduce the lag time.
Or improve the sensitivity of the feedback, yes.
Okay, let's take this into the world of organizational problems, because this is where a CLD can really expose that managerial myopia, that trap of managing parts instead of the whole. Let's talk about the back office rock.
This maps a classic vicious circle. An increase in workload reduces the team's ability to cope. This, in turn, increases the incidence of error.
Which puts a strain on management.
And management has to intervene. Which, of course, further increases the original workload. It's just a self-feeding treadmill of burnout.
And in this scenario, managers get asked to cut costs. So they target the visible things headcount, the IT budget. What is the crucial, non-obvious cost they're missing?
They completely ignore the link from incidence of error to cost. Fixing mistakes is expensive. Dealing with compliance failures, reworking customer orders, that all costs money. Without seeing that link on the diagram, cutting headcount looks like a pure saving.
But the diagram forces you to recognize
that this action is profoundly counterproductive. By starving the back office of well-trained people and good IT, they might actually be adding to the total cost of the organization.
That is the aha moment. Let's look at another one. The TV company trying to cut costs, but facing all this internal resistance.
Right. So the company was under immense pressure. Cost cuts were threatening program quality, which would reduce viewer figures and then revenue.
And at the same time, it was increasing staff disaffection. People were leaving.
Exactly. So they gathered the management team, the producer, the HR director, the managing director, and they realized they were all operating with totally different mental models of the problem. The HR manager wanted salary hikes to keep people. The producer demanded higher quality standards. The MD was focused only on revenue.
They were all talking past each other.
Completely. The CLD became the neutral ground. It mapped the entire interwoven structure and showed how each solution was a kind of break on the vicious circles, but with different costs and, crucially, different time delays.
So by seeing the whole system laid out, they could finally get past their own parochial interests.
And establish a collective view, which is really the definition of strategic wisdom. The CLD just gets everyone's assumptions out on the table.
Let's pull way back now to the biggest possible picture. Public policy, environmental systems, the entire planet.
Here we turn to the Gaia hypothesis from James Lovelock. It's the idea that the Earth is a single, self-regulating, self-organized, open system.
Like the bicycle rider, but on a planetary scale.
A vastly more complex scale, yes. But Gaia maintains a dynamic stability, like keeping the Earth's temperature around 14 degrees Celsius for millions of years through these huge interconnected global feedback loops.
So the conflict is that human economic growth is driven by this incredibly powerful reinforcing loop. The desire for wealth, continuous expansion.
And that loop is constantly running up against Gaia's fundamental balancing loops, which are designed to maintain stability.
So when we pollute, we increase CO2, thickening that global blanket, the greenhouse effect, and that pushes the Earth's actual temperature above the natural set point.
And Gaia's slower natural balancing mechanisms, like the process that buries carbon as rock, they just can't cope with the speed of our modern input.
So from a systems view, if those primary balancing loops fail, what does Gaia do next?
The CLD structure for global systems suggests that Gaia will invoke other, more severe self-correcting mechanisms.
Such as
increased storms, flooding, famine, disease. They all represent feedback loops that rapidly increase mortality. The grim conclusion of this view is that the ultimate effect may be to drastically reduce the human population, to remove the irritant and restore balance.
That is an extraordinarily stark perspective.
Yeah.
So whether we're talking about a planet or a company, what does systems thinking teach us about the wisest policy for constrained growth?
The wisdom is crystal clear. Don't just pedal harder on the reinforcing loop. Don't just try to force more growth. Instead, you focus intensely on identifying and alleviating the constraint.
Taking the brakes off, not hitting the accelerator harder.
Exactly. Our sources use a fascinating historical example. 18th century Britain. Urban growth was severely constrained by disease from overcrowding and poor sanitation.
And what was the policy that fixed that?
It wasn't a policy at all. It was the inadvertent result of the widespread drinking of tea.
Yeah.
Tea required boiling water, which sterilized it. That massively reduced disease, which alleviated the constraint on urban population growth, which then fueled the Industrial Revolution. A small, tangential change had an enormous systemic impact.
So understanding where the brakes are is far more critical than just hitting the gas.
Far more critical.
So what does this all mean for you then? Well, systems thinking, even just sketching out these causal loop diagrams, helps you move past mere management and achieve true wisdom. You're mapping cause and effect, you're sharing mental models, and critically, you're anticipating the impact of those pesky time delays.
And this is just the beginning. Those CLDs, which are basically static pictures, they can be turbocharged using computer simulation. It's a technique called system dynamics.
And that turns the diagram into a dynamic laboratory of the future.
Precisely. And the technical insight is that all managerial efforts, everything from hiring to advertising spend to pricing, it all boils down to managing flows to adjust the desired stocks.
Stocks being the things that accumulate, like staff morale, reputation, your customer base. And the flows are the actions, the levers you pull.
That's it. And to leave you with one final unifying insight, the underlying causal loop structure that drives every major boom and bust cycle from 17th century tulip mania and the South Sea bubble all the way to modern crises like the dot-com crash is fundamentally the same.
It's the same reinforcing loop. Media comment drives investor perceptions, which drives the share price, which drives more media comment.
And on it goes. The context changes, tulips today, tech stocks tomorrow. But the structural engine of exponential growth and catastrophic decline is identical. Recognizing those core, repeatable structures gives you a kind of universal predictive power, regardless of the industry. And that is perhaps the ultimate prize here.
So you know what to look for the next time a success story starts feeling a little too obvious to be true.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.